Welcome back, everybody. Thriller by Michael Jackson. It's a classic. What kind of a radio host would I be if I didn't play Thriller during Halloween season? I know it was last night, but, you know, my show runs on Fridays, not Thursdays. I wanted to play it, all right? So, yeah, Thriller by Michael Jackson. This is Still Talking. I'm Kieran Light. I'm the guy who does not shut up about sports ever. And, look, we had some good sports last night. It was great. I didn't really watch much of it. Because I was handing out candy for Halloween, and I actually went trick-or-treating for the first time in 6 years, and it was fantastic, by the way. Trick-or-treating is awesome. I'm glad I got to do that again, and no one got mad at me, and I got some candy. I even got some beer. Look, last night, the San Antonio Spurs were in Utah, and they played the Jazz. And it was not really a close game. The Spurs won 106-88. The Jazz sucked. They're 0-5. No one had any expectations for the Jazz. They were bad last year. I think that team's still just trying to figure out what they want to do going forward. But I want to highlight this game because I think this is a big game for the Spurs. This was a get-back game. Because the Spurs right now, look, they had actually some expectations. Now, no one thought they were going to be contenders. No one's saying that they needed to win a championship. But we did want to see some key improvement from the Spurs, namely from Victor Wembanyama. Last season's first overall pick, one of the most hyped-up prospects of all time. Look, had an amazing rookie year, and going into this year, we wanted to see him really improve and become this kind of superstar that we've expected. Because last season, like I said, he was fantastic. He almost won DPOY, ran away with Rookie of the Year. You could just see how much talent was there. You didn't even have I don't care if you've never watched a lick of basketball. You could look at that guy and say, he's incredible. But going into this season so far, he wasn't that great. Look, last year he was averaging around 21 points per game and 10 rebounds and 3 assists. This year he's got 16, 11, and 2. And so the Spurs come in, they start the season, Wemby's stats are lower, they're 2-3, they're 13th in the West going into this game against Utah. They really needed a win. And they got exactly what they needed because they were great last night. Like I said, they had that big win. And Wemby, when we got his stats there, he had 25. He had 5 blocks and 5 steals. And then he adds on 9 rebounds and 7 assists. Chris Paul was another addition that they made. And he was meant to sort of be like the floor general for this offense, like he is with every team that he's at. And he had a great game as well. 19 points, 10 assists, 2 steals. 7 rebounds from Chris Paul. That's rare. Wemby was a plus 43. Chris Paul's a plus 37. Like, that's incredible. And so I think what you saw last night against the Jazz was the Spurs at their best. This is what we want to see from them. Now, we don't expect them to do that well against every team every night. But this is what you want to see from the Spurs more consistently. And like I said, right now they're struggling. Only 2-3 in their first 5 games. They were 1-3 in their first 4 games. Then they get their second win last night. Their losses have come to the Mavericks, Rockets, and Thunder. And their wins came against, other than the Jazz last night, against the Rockets. So look, I think to start the season, though, despite some of these struggles, the Spurs are fine going forward. I'm actually really excited about the Spurs. So the Mavs and the Thunder are two of the best teams in the West and in the NBA. So that's fine for them to lose those games. Those are two really, really good teams with just stars everywhere. Tough for a young upstart team to really beat that. And then the Rockets, they've shown that they can beat them because, you know, they did. But they also lost them. And the Rockets, like, last season proved that the Rockets are a team that can just get hot out of nowhere. They went on that crazy, 13-game win streak, nearly made the playoffs last year. So The Rockets are a threat, no matter what. They're a tough out. You're not just going to roll over, or you're not just going to, like, they're nothing to sneeze at, right? And look, changes were made to this offense and to this team really as a whole going into this season. So I think that's another reason why, you know, like, these struggles, these kind of growing pains should have been expected. Like I said, Chris Paul comes to the team and he changes the offense. He changes the look of this team because now he's the ball carrier, right? They did some weird experiments last year with, you know, Jeremy Sochan, and they tried to use Trey Jones, and there was even some, like, Wemby bring up the ball thing. And so last year was an experimentation year. And not a lot of it worked. So they said, okay, let's go get a proven veteran, a guy that, you know, has something in the tank still, and that, look, we know he can do. We want to bring in a guy we know is effective at doing just regular point guard stuff, which is exactly what you want for a young center like Wemby. So Chris Paul comes in. He starts playing great. He's averaging about 19 points and I think 9 assists this season. He's awesome. But it's still a change, right? It's still not what anyone on the team is used to. Wemby's still adjusting to the league, and all these guys on the Spurs that were there before him, they've kind of gotten used to this other way of playing the game. And Chris Paul comes in, and he changes all that. So that's going to take time to get adjusted to. Then I think another thing that's causing these growing pains is Wemby needs to adjust to the NBA again. Look, here's the thing about young athletes, and specifically with the NBA. You're a young athlete. You get drafted. You join a team. You go from college or whatever other league you're in to the top league in the world. That's an adjustment as is. And if you're a guy like Wemby, who's this hyped-up prospect, and then you come in, he starts dominating early. Great. Now you have way more expectations. Initially, coming into the NBA, Wemby's expectations were, is he this really good player? Is he this really good rookie? And then he showed exactly that. Okay, but now you have another set of expectations. It just continues. And so now he has to take a superstar leap. That takes some adjusting. Add in the fact that Chris Paul comes in and changes the look of this team, the flow of this team. So I'm okay with Wemby only averaging 16 points a game instead of the 21 he had last year. I think that it'll improve. He's just adjusting to now having to become a superstar. As you get older in the league, okay, there's no reason to believe that Wemby's not going to become that superstar by the end of this year, really by the end of the month. As you get older and you go into more and more seasons, after about, I'd say, the second or the third one, then those expectations are kind of, okay, just be good, and then we'll see from there, right? You don't have this continual, annual, secular change of expectations and goals that the media and fans kind of place upon you. You're not under that pressure as much. Or at the very least, it's prolonged. Like, you can go a couple years without winning a championship, and people will be like, okay, that's fine. He's still playing really well. So I think Wemby's adjustment to not, so going from just entering the NBA and then now having to adjust to being a superstar, that's part of the reason why he's struggling, and I'm kind of using air quotes there. And look, they also have a reworked roster outside of Chris Paul, because they also add Stephon Castle in the draft as a point guard, right? So now you have this weird point guard room of Trey Jones, Chris Paul, Stephon Castle. Castle is this really high upside prospect player. He's a project because he's really good on the defensive side of the ball. And at least that's what we saw in college. And offensively, he needs some work. So they have this point guard room with Trey Jones, Chris Paul, and Castle. Trey Jones he's good. We like him. I think they want to use it going forward because Chris Paul is really old. They don't really know how long they're going to have a guy like him around. So I think the goal here is to get Chris Paul to sort of mentor these two guys. And I think they took Castle knowing that he's good on defense and hoping that by the time Chris Paul is done, that he can step up offensively to either take Trey Jones' role or compete with him and have these guys get in some healthy competition that'll help them improve even more. But that takes more time. That takes more gelling and getting used to. And then you also had Harrison Barnes, who's trying to be... Harrison Barnes is another vet that they added to try and get some extra scoring out of him. Harrison Barnes has his own needs as a player because he needs to be in a certain spot on the floor and he needs to be used in a certain way to really be effective. Again, like Chris Paul, changes how things are played there in San Antonio. So that's going to delay their ascension, right? And also Keldon Johnson. Keldon Johnson was this really great young scorer that they had. They've had him for a few years now. He's getting used less and less. In his first three seasons, his usage rate went up all the way, I think, to 27. And since since 2022, that year we got that was his career high, it's gone down. I think now it's down to about 17. So again, another change in how this team plays basketball. All these changes are why I think the Spurs are, again, struggling, and I'm using air quotes. But look, they're only one game below 500. And I'm okay with these struggles, because look at these next seven games. They have the Timberwolves, then they have the Clippers, the Rockets, Blazers, Jazz, Kings, and Wizards. Five of those games are at home. The only games that aren't are against the Rockets and the Clippers. To me, there's no reason why they shouldn't go 6-1 And frankly, I think that they can give Minnesota a run for their money. There's a world where they go 7-0 in the next seven games. And that would take them to 9-3. This is the time that you want the Spurs to be bad or inconsistent. Wemby's struggles are okay for right now. The offense, you know, not quite being there is okay for right now. Because this is the easy part of their schedule. This is the time where they can make mistakes, and there's a larger margin for error. They can make mistakes against bad teams and still come out with wins, right? That's how they kind of, that's pretty much how they beat the Rockets. And the very start of their schedule, these first five games, were their losses, like I said, came to good teams. The Rockets are a team that can get hot, and the Mavs and Thunder are just really good. Mavs were in the finals last year. Thunder are, by all accounts, going to run the West. So I'm okay that it's taking time for Wemby to get back to his 20 points per game like we saw last year. And I'm okay that it's taking them some time to really integrate Chris Paul in this offense. Right now, they're 29th in offensive rating with a 104.4. But they're 5th in defensive rating at 107.1. And again, like I said, it's great for them to have these struggles against bad teams because they don't need to be perfect. This gives them time to find a rhythm and an identity because after those seven games, from late November to mid-December, they start to see some more good teams, right? They still have some bad teams to play against, but now they're sort of getting into the mix of some better teams, some playoff-caliber teams. After that, and this starts on Christmas, they have like a 24-game bloodbath. It's this stretch that runs from Christmas all the way to like just before Valentine's Day. And in this game, they got to play New York. Then they got to play Brooklyn, who can... Brooklyn, to me, is the John Starks of NBA teams. It's like they can dunk on Jordan. Whether or not it's legit, no one really cares. You can debate that. But at the end of the day, it's a great play that gets momentum. And they took down a giant. That's what the Nets can do. They can always just take out a team. They can go into Milwaukee and just beat the Bucks, or they can go into Denver and just shoot the bricks off. And you're like, okay, well, it's an anomaly, you know. Cam Thomas just had one of his random games, and Jokic just had one of his random bad games. Doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, they still beat a really good team, right? So the Nets can just go toe-to-toe with anybody. So they have New York, then Brooklyn, then they get Minnesota. Clippers are an easy win. But, you know, I mean, maybe Kawhi's back, who knows. But then you get Denver back-to-back. You get Milwaukee back-to-back, L.A., and then Memphis back-to-back, then Miami, another back-to-back against Indiana. Then you get Milwaukee again, Miami again, Memphis again. A little bit of a stretch of Atlanta and Charlotte where they don't have, where they just have easy teams. And Orlando too, but, you know, Paolo might be back, so that could be a tough game. And then you finish it off with Washington, another easy game, but then you have the defending champs in the Boston Celtics. In that 24-game stretch, they need to be in perfect form. I'm not saying they need to be perfect in all those games, but they need to have an identity. They need to know who they are, what they're doing. This is what Spurs basketball is going to look like for this season. And so that's why I'm okay with these struggles for right now, because they're playing against these bad teams. And they showed last night that they can really beat up on some of these bad teams like Utah. And so if they can keep doing this consistently, again, they don't have to be this good, but if they can just, you know, get 80% of what they had last night, do that on a consistent level, then that'll give them momentum going forward as they go into like the slightly tougher stretch in late November. And then if they can continue to just improve in that stretch, then by the time this 24-game bloodbath happens from Christmas to Valentine's Day, then I think that they'll be all right. If not, then they're screwed. That 24-game stretch to me is where the season will be determined for the Spurs. If they go anything close to 500, they're not going to make the play-in. I think if they were to go 12-12, then yeah, they're not going to make the play-in. I think though, if they can get 15 wins, if they can go 15-9 in that stretch, I could see them getting the sixth seed in the West. So, yeah. The Spurs right now, I'm fine with these struggles. I still believe in this team a lot. I really still like what I'm seeing from Chris Paul, despite his age. Wemby again, I think that the 16 points per game thing is an anomaly. You know, it's a sophomore slump. He's in the first week of his second year, and there's no reason there's no reason that it'll keep going. But the Spurs do need to start figuring it out, and this is the time for them to make these mistakes, because going forward they're going to have a much, much harder time winning games. Another NBA team that I want to talk about here is, to me, the most impressive team in this young NBA season. It's the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're 5-0, first in the league, not just the Eastern Conference. They are number one in offensive rating with a 123.4, and they're third in defensive rating with a 105.7. In these first five games, they have three games where they've scored 134 points or more, and in those first five games, they have three games where they're holding their opponents to just over 100 points. Look, last season, and really ever since Donovan Mitchell got to that team, I was not a fan of Cleveland's roster construction. If you've listened to my show, particularly the episode where I talked about the Minnesota-New York cat trade, you'll know that roster construction to me in basketball is really important, because how you build your roster really determines what you can do on the court, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I can go on for like an hour talking about roster construction and my philosophy towards it, but that would take too much time, and I would need a whiteboard, and I'd have to draw out diagrams and stuff. But it's very important to me, and I have a certain eclectic view of it. So when Donovan Mitchell joins the Cavs and they have what I call like the double-double roster, it looked clunky to me. By double-double, I mean they have two lanky, rim-protecting, kind of post-up centers running the defense, and then you have two small but explosive, ball-dominant guards running the offense. To me, that didn't seem like it would work. And while the Cavs were good and they would make the playoffs, last season they were great. They had this one stretch where they were awesome, I think, from like January to February. I still never truly believed in them. And look, they never did that much. They got, I think it was, they got to the second round, I think. No, first round, first year D-Mitch was there. And I can't remember. I think they lost in the second round last year. So while they were a good team, they made the playoffs, they didn't really do much. However, now, this Cavs team, despite having the same roster construction, is clearly improved. And while, again, for the past few years, I didn't like this double-double thing that they had going on, I see the vision now. I understand what they were going for, because Kenny Atkinson has turned this team around. Newly appointed head coach Kenny Atkinson, who, by the way, used to coach for the Nets. He went to, after getting fired from the Nets, he was an assistant in Golden State for a few years. And now, he's the driving force behind the Cavs' ascension. Because so last year, they were 16th in offensive rating, 7th in defensive rating. They were 13th in effective field goal percentage and true shooting. And they were 24th in pace. This season, like I said, they're first in offensive rating and they're third in defensive rating. So you got a 15-spot improvement on offense and 4 on defense. Then they're first in effective field goal percentage and true shooting, whereas they were 13th last year in both of those categories. And while they were 24th in pace last year, now they're 8th. Look, Mark Daigneault is a great coach. Steve Kerr is a great coach. Right now, my coach of the year pick is Kenny Atkinson, because what I'm seeing from the Cavs is an all-around balanced roster, which is not at all what I've expected, because, again, I always thought it was just too clunky. I thought they had too much of the same two things. But Kenny Atkinson comes into Cleveland, and he says, no, we can make this work. And right now, the Cavs might be one of the most dangerous teams in the East, because the Knicks don't quite look like themselves, because the Bucks are... I really want the Bucks to be a really good team, and I thought that they would be, but right now they don't look like themselves. They're a shell. The Celtics are still the Celtics, but you know the Heat have all these issues. The Sixers are injured. Cleveland could really give anyone in the East a run for their money, because right now they're number one in the entire NBA, and they're playing out of their minds. The thing that really impresses me a lot is how you go and you look at like the scoring highs or the rebound highs in each of these games for the Cavs. It's somewhat different. Like, Donovan Mitchell hasn't been the leading scorer in each of these games, and Jared Allen hasn't been the leading rebounder in each of these games. it really shows that like Kenny Atkinson is getting everybody involved, not just equally, but efficiently. And that is not the Cavs team that I was expecting. That is not the Cavs team that I've seen recently over the past few seasons. So this much improvement, this much of a turnaround this quickly, very impressive, very shocking, and just overall great. So Kenny Atkinson right now is coach of the year. There's no reason. I don't want to hear any other arguments. That's my coach of the year right now. So with my last few minutes here on the show, I thought that I'd get back to doing another lights list, because right now it's week 9 of the NFL season just started. We just had Texans-Jets on Thursday night. I'm not going to talk about that game because I'm just sick of talking about that team. But I thought, okay, I did my lights list going into the season. I did the lights list quarter of the way through. So now I got to do it halfway through. And not a ton has changed, but there is one team that I begrudgingly had to put in the top five. So at number one, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. There's no reason to have them any lower. They're 7-0, first in the NFL by record. They're still the Chiefs. I don't care that Mahomes isn't playing well. He's still Kelsey. Still Andy Reid. You know, then they add D-Hop. And while, again, D-Hop in his debut against the Raiders on Sunday only had 2 catches for 29 yards, I don't really care, because D-Hop, while he's kind of washed, he's not the player that he was a few years ago when he was the best receiver in the NFL, he's still got something in the tank, much like Chris Paul and the Spurs. And I think that with time, he's only going to improve in this offense. Andy Reid's a genius. He'll figure him out. Kelsey, by the way, is coming back to form against the Raiders. 10 receptions, 90 yards, and a touchdown. And this defense, this Chiefs defense that is just so annoying and stingy, is they're still chugging along. They're 7-0. There's no reason why they won't go 8-0. Yeah, this is best team in the league, and I'm not going to put them any lower than 1 until I see some crazy changes. Number 2 in the league, though, is the Lions. They're 6-1. Lions right now are on a 5-game win streak, and they're scoring like crazy. Since week 4, they've scored 42, 47, 31, and then last Sunday against the Titans, 52. They lead the NFL in touchdowns. They're tied with Baltimore, but they have 29. Jahmyr Gibbs is cooking right now. In his last 2 games, Jahmyr Gibbs has 243 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns. He's averaging 9.3 a carry. Just think about that, 9.3 yards a carry. Effectively, what Jahmyr Gibbs is doing is you hand him the ball on 1st and 10, he's getting you to 2nd and inches every time. That's insane. Jared Goff is not tasked with doing much, but he's still playing well. I've seen a couple rumblings of him in the MVP talks. Not really, but I've seen a few people mention it. I know. I think it was I can't remember who it was on ESPN that just said he's perfect. I think it was Matthew Slater. So, look, Lions, they're great. Moving forward, their next 5 games is Green Bay, Houston, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, and Chicago. I could see them going 5-0. They could be 11-1 after those 5 games. Number 3, right for me, is the Commanders. Jaden Daniels isn't just Rookie of the Year. He's a possible MVP. He's completing 71% of his passes. He's got 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions only. Then rushing, he's got 424 rush yards. It's more than most running backs. And he's got 4 rushing touchdowns. He is an absolute weapon on offense right now. The Commanders' offense is 3rd in total yards per game. And they're 13th in total defense. And they're only getting better. They allowed 15-7 over their last 2 games. Whereas they're allowing like 30. Number 4, before I got to wrap up here, the Baltimore Ravens. Because this rushing offense is just off the charts. Off the charts. I mean, we know Lamar and Derrick Henry are really great. But they lead the NFL in rush yards per game and total rush yards. Then they just traded for Deontay Johnson to give an actual, hopefully consistent receiving weapon for Lamar. Which, by the way, Lamar's playing incredible. And then number 5, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, sadly. I think Russ has fixed this offense. The defense is still great. The Steelers' defense is always great. But I think Russ may have figured out this is the best I've seen this offense play over the last few years. And Russell Wilson seems to have unlocked George Pickens, because he had a good game against the Giants, but then 2 weeks ago, 111 yards and a touchdown versus the Jets. That's it. Fly Like an Eagle by Seal to wrap things up here.